Let's go. Ready? From the top. My favorite shows on TV have 12 minutes of advertising. I can't get behind that kind of time.
Eat quickly, drive faster, make more money now. I can't get behind that.
My kids say, he said to me, and I'm like, and he's like, and she's like,
it's all he's all, she's all.
I can't get behind that kind of, like, English. That'll be 6 to 8 weeks before delivery.
The rising oceans, the warming temperatures.
The dying polar bears, no tigers in 50 years.
Rising poison in the air and water.
I can't understand it. By the price of gas.
All right, that means it's time to do another episode of Ask or Tell Me Anything, where you, the listener, should feel empowered to call 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677 if you're not into the alphanumeric thing. And you could just ask or tell me anything. And it doesn't have to be a weighty issue, or it could be a weighty issue with no intrinsic news value, too. For example, I'll just give you an example, a kind of thing that you could have called up about. Although I worry that you would have called up about it, and I'm going to preempt it. So before I do that, let's just see what happens first. 888-720-WNPR. We'll see who calls up about what. But before I do that, I want to mention that, A, I am the only thing I have by way of weaponry, by way of shield or sword, is I have three sealed envelopes. I don't know if I can actually make them make a noise. You hear that? It's a sealed envelope. They are from Mr. Karp. Just to review, I went to college with Mr. Karp. He was smarter than everybody else at college. He graduated from a fairly prestigious Ivy League institution in 3 years, Phi Beta Kappa and summa cum laude. And he makes it a practice to send me clippings that he finds important in these envelopes, repurposed envelopes. And so I have them. And I have not opened them. I will only open them under two circumstances, one of two different circumstances. The first circumstance would be that just nobody calls up all day, which, you know, that could happen. In which case, at a certain point, I might open up the envelope just so I'd have something else to talk about besides my own thoughts. I have a lot of thoughts. So, I mean, we could be well into the show by the time I had to do this. And the other one would be if you called me and said, please open one of the Mr. Karp envelopes. At which point I would do that, and I would begin to talk about something that was in them, hopefully. But I might expect you, the person who called in, to at least participate nominally in that conversation, even if all you do is go, uh-huh. So anyway, so those are the circumstances under which the Mr. Karp envelopes can and will be used. So there are major issues that I'm prepared to talk about. There are a major issue that I'm prepared to talk about, but I'm also prepared to talk about about minor issues too. And oh, I have to tell you this. This is not the purpose of today's show. I'm only saying this to make certain people who work at this company uncomfortable. But we are still in the process of either branding or rebranding the show. It sort of depends on whether you think the show ever was branded in the first place, whether it ever had. Like, you know, I mean, our logo was drawn in like 20 minutes and nobody even had a conversation about it. Someone just came downstairs and said, here's your logo. And like that, you know, we went on the air in 2009 and I don't really think we had any conversations at all about what our brand was. But anyway, elsewhere in the building, there are people who want to do this. And so we are in these conversations. And so we had one yesterday, a rebranding conversation, a branding conversation. We don't know. And we actually encountered a really, really good two-word slogan, which I am not going to say on the air today because it might be like the official slogan of the show or something at some point. And so, I mean, I would, you know, would there be a rollout? And I would probably come down a golden escalator and, you know, announce what the new slogan was and stuff like that. And also, you know, I mean, people listen to this show from other shows. Ira Glass has been known to listen to this show. I don't want our slogan getting stolen before we ever get to use it. I don't want some, you know, I don't know. I don't want anybody at any other Weasel show trying to, only our Weasel show should have this slogan. Anyway, but if you have your own let's say, 2 to 5 word slogan that you think perfectly expresses the ethos of the Colin McEnroe Show, that would be something you could call in about. I mean, it's not the only thing. I hope you will call in about real topics. The number is 888-720-WNPR. Do it slower. 888-720-WNPR. Or if you prefer just, you know, integers, 888-720-9677. Those are integers, are they not? I think they are. All right, and I got the Mr. Karp envelopes. And so I'll tell you some things that are not important, especially, that I am nonetheless somewhat interested in. And then if that has not provoked any conversation, ideally what you will do is call in about something that I am ill-prepared to talk about. I mean, that's the fun of the show, right? But it is true, and I don't know how this got by me, although I think a lot of things get by me these days, but there's a new Girl Scout cookie flavor. Now, let me just say a few things about that. First of all, Girl Scout cookies are a very complicated thing, right? In a way, if you looked at it the wrong way, it's like cookie makers using child labor to sell their cookies, right? And it did come out a few years ago that I think they sort of fixed this up, and this is sort of an old story, but I think because these bakers, these big baking companies, bid on these contracts because it's a lucrative contract, I think. And they would like wine and dine some of the Girl Scout leaders and, you know, fly them to resorts and stuff. So I think they fixed that problem. I don't think that's happening anymore. But like even now with this new flavor of Girl Scout cookie, the name is Adventureful. Which is, see, that's the kind of thing that they probably should have had a longer branding conversation about, because it's adventureful. It's just F-U-L, adventureful, like bountiful, I guess. But adventureful is a really stupid name. It's not a word, and it's not something that we wish was a word. It wasn't. There are certain things where you can make up a word, you know, and everyone will go, "That's great. That should have been a word already." But that's not the case here. Adventureful is not a good name. And they're sort of brownie-like, we are told. We actually are told by the Washington Post, where they managed to get a hold of some Adventurefuls, that they are crunchy chocolate cookie base, which was reminiscent of the disc in a Thin Mint, which I think most people would say, if there's sort of a Tigris and Euphrates of Girl Scout cookies, there's sort of a one Girl Scout cookie to rule them all. when Girl Scout cookie do find them and in the darkness bind them, it would be the Thin Mint. But this is sort of, it's like a, I don't know. It's brownie-like, and there's a caramel topping that lends a pleasantly butterscotch-like flavor to it. But here's the other thing about this. The other thing about this that you should understand is that you could buy two different boxes of Adventurefuls, or for that matter, any Girl Scout cookie, and depending on where you bought them and under what circumstances, they wouldn't be the same, because these contracts do get farmed out to multiple different baking companies. For example, the Adventurefuls are at minimum produced by the ABC Bakers Company and the Little Brownie Bakers Company. So I'm just saying that deserves some awareness, because Girl Scout cookies are kind of a seasonal ritual. And the problem with it was last year, nobody wanted any damn Girl Scout cookies, and nobody wanted any damn Girl Scouts showing up at the door with their runny noses and, you know, no badge for wearing masks. It just wasn't a good business model last year, having Girl Scouts show up at your door. So, and you know, they do these things where they set a booth where they sell, and that wasn't working really. So they wound up, I think they got stuck with a lot of Girl Scout cookies. And here, allow me to suggest something. I guess it's too late for this, because Ozark, which is one of my favorite ever sort of streamiverse shows of all the shows that have ever been created specifically for streaming companies, Ozark, it could be my ultimate favorite, I'm not sure, but it's about to enter its fourth season. This is a Marty Bird plot waiting to happen, right? I mean, it would just be, somebody else should take this and run with it, because Marty is going to be all done. Everything Marty is ever going to do is now sitting in a can somewhere. But, you know, washing money through Girl Scout cookies, that's an interesting plot. All right, that's all I got. No, I actually have a lot more. But people are calling in right now, and I am going to take some of their calls. Once again, the number 888-720-WNPR. And don't forget, you have the option to simply ask that I open one of the Mr. Carp envelopes, and I will do that. All right, here's Sue in Brooklyn, Connecticut. Hi, Sue.
Hi.
You have the floor.
Yeah. Okay, I was just wondering. I listen to you every day.
Oh, thank you.
And, well, every day that you're on, sometimes other people replace you. But when you're on, I listen to you, and I also listen to Terry Gross, whom I find fascinating. And I was wondering if you ever thought about having her on your show and interviewing Terry Gross. I think that would be, you know, to see where she came from and her favorite experiences, and some of the same questions that she asked her guests.
Right.
I think that would be good.
I feel like it has been done. I believe Mark Maron did interview Terry Gross, maybe even in front of a live audience or something. I mean, it's not as though nobody's done that before. It's a really interesting idea. I don't think I'm the right person to interview Terry Gross. But and the other question is, would that interview, I'm asking you this question, Sue, would the purpose of that interview simply to be to draw Terry Gross out about aspects of her life that she perhaps doesn't regularly share with other people, or would it be to challenge her about things?
Well, I would say to bring out aspects of her life that she doesn't regularly share with people, because she does ask a lot of people some very personal questions. And just to see if we know her like we think we do.
So in other words, you feel like I have standing to ask Terry Gross some personal questions about her of my own making, because she does that to other people.
Yeah.
All right. I would do it. I would be happy to do it. I would be honored for the chance to interview Terry Gross. I don't think that's going to happen. And I do also feel, I don't know who else has interviewed her, but I'm almost 100% sure that Mark Maron has done it at least once. And Mark Maron, in his own way, is also a pretty good interviewer. But it's an interesting concept. I thank you for it. And thanks very much for calling. That was Sue from Brooklyn. That would be Brooklyn, Connecticut, however. The number, once again, 888-720-WNPR. 888-720-WNPR or 720-9677. Okay, I'm trying to figure out. We'll just go to, I don't know what these things are about. All right, let's talk to Bill in Meriden. I mean, they all look kind of interesting. All right, so here's Bill in Meriden. Hi, Bill, you have the floor.
Hi, Colin. You were talking about logos today for the show. I don't have one, but I was just interested to know if anyone was able to see the arrow in the FedEx logo without first being told, or the American Eagle in the post office logo, unless it was pointed out to them. Nobody in my family could. Just curious.
Yeah, I'm. First of all, it's an interesting question, and it's an additionally interesting question because, okay, I would not be. I don't think I ever saw the arrow in the FedEx logo. I'm pulling up the logo right now. I still don't see it. Where's the arrow? Is there really an arrow, or are you toying with me?
An arrow in that, and they made a special font to create an arrow. Now that I've mentioned it, if you look at it, you will not be able to unsee the arrow.
Okay. So and so there's an eagle in the. Here's the other thing is, so it feels subliminal, right? Like if you have something embedded in your logo that nobody will, or very few people will consciously notice, is it doing a job for you if it has to be pointed out to people? Or are people, you could sort of say the same thing about the famous negative space in the Whalers logo, right? That there's, you know, a negative space H embedded in Peter Good's famous Whalers hockey team logo. But the thing is, like, if people don't notice it, okay, so McPants is telling me I need to look between the E and the X at the end of the logo. Oh, man, I don't know. Oh, I see it now.
Yeah.
Oh, I see it.
There you go.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I don't.
Is it a good look?
I don't.
Is it a terrible logo that nobody can see it unless it's pointed out to them? I don't believe in the subliminal thing. They used to have those messages embedded in, like, background music in stores that said, don't steal. And that was proven to be a big sham. And the guy who invented it was a con man.
Right.
So I don't know if there's any logic to this subliminal argument.
You and I are asking the same question, but neither one of us is providing. Well, actually, you're sort of providing the outlines of an answer, or perhaps the outlines of an arrow. But yes, I mean, I think the question is does this arrow have any value if, in fact, it's hard to see until somebody forces you to see it? And you're right. Now that I do see it, I can't stop looking at it. All right. You may have just ruined my life, but we'll see how the rest of the day goes anyway. It's an interesting question about logos. And I'm not really a logo person. Like, I'd be hard-pressed to think of a logo that I actually care about. Nonetheless, we have a logo that, well, it is. It's very old. And the person who prepared the logo for us was a very nice and highly skilled, somewhat overworked person who shall remain nameless at the moment. But I don't think it's his best work. I think it really felt like there was a little period of about 12 hours where they thought, oh, there's no logo for this show. What are we going to put up on the internet? You know, what are we going to put up here or there? There's no logo. Somebody make a logo. I mean, we had no conversations with this person at all whatsoever. I wasn't even asking whether do I like these colors. Nothing. So, you know, anyway. Okay, let's go, as long as you're being self-referential, and then we'll go back to sort of real topics. And so let's go to Robert in Beacon Falls. Hi, Robert. You have the floor.
Good afternoon. Yes, I spoke to your producer, and one of the things when you were talking about having a motto for your show, I sign off on all correspondence and missives and such with happy trails and play well. And it also spawned an idea for me about proposing a college course, kind of separate but associated with this, about play. I am a teacher, and I teach jewelry making here and around the world, basically, abroad and everything. And I always ask my students when the last time they worked at their bench, got to the end and didn't evaluate it. You just played with things, but you got to the end and didn't evaluate it. And I would love to see, and I've also taught graduate school at Pace University for a number of years, and that's another thing that I posit to the students there about getting to, about play. Play being, again, open-ended experimentation, and I think a lot of higher education, all education, but especially higher education, could certainly use that.
Well, I agree. And I should say that starting next week, I will be back at Yale University in their fine political science department teaching a seminar that I've taught in two previous years. And one of the things that I try to do in this seminar, and obviously a political science seminar isn't a grand opportunity for play, but one of the things that we'll do, we're actually not going to meet in person for the first 2 weeks because of Omicron, but presumably in early February we'll have our first class. And what I will be doing is passing a bag around in which there are, I don't know, 50 little tiny rubber ducks, and they're all different. And each person has to reach into the bag and pull out a rubber duck, which will be different from everybody else's rubber duck, and that will be, you know, one of their defining symbols. And we actually do have, year by year, a class motto. For example, in 2018, we were still getting used to the Trump presidency, and so our class motto was, every day something has to happen. The premise being that Trump was a product of reality television, and in reality television, something has to happen, right? Somebody has to throw wine at somebody else, or something like that.
The script calls for.
Yeah. And so in the Trump presidency, there was always, every day something did happen. They made absolutely sure that every day something happened. And so that was our slogan. Last year, our slogan was, staying reasonably well-informed is very hard work, which is not as kicky a motto. But yeah, I mean, I do think in education, and we do a class project at the end where I divide them up in teams. Last year, the two teams, one of the teams had to manage a rollout of an Ivanka Trump 2024 presidential bid, and the other team had to manage a similar rollout for Nikki Haley, the idea being that they would be locked in a primary. And I do say to the students, this should be fun. It's the end of the term. Stop worrying about your grade and do and play and have fun. And I think they do. So I think we're on the same page. All right. So let's go to Carolyn, and then we're going to Aaron. And we got a lot of people waiting. And what does – oh, yeah, that's a good one. Marianne has got a good one, too. Okay. Let me see. Am I getting guidance also from the producer about this? Okay. All right. Jonathan McPants, who's much more visually and logo-oriented than I am, cannot see an eagle in the post office logo. He says it just is an eagle. It's not like a hidden eagle. I don't know. I don't have time for that right now. I'm under a lot of pressure, can't you see? Here's Carolyn in New Milford. You have the floor.
Hello. My name is Carolyn, and I have a great concern about the denial of the Voting Rights Act. And I correctly predicted both Obama's wins, both Trump's win, and the coup. When Trump won, I said there's going to be a coup. And now I am predicting a coup within the states. Certain states will have a coup. And it is a very dangerous road we're going down when votes can just be flipped. And it's just a scary time.
I think, first of all, congratulations on your prediction abilities. I should tell you that our episode tomorrow's episode, produced by senior producer Lily Tyson, is about predicting the future. People who are good at it, people who are bad at it, people who should apologize when they get it wrong, all that kind of stuff. So congratulations on your super forecasting. I think everybody knows we've gone from being in an epistemic crisis in which the sort of the basis for establishing knowledge and truth and fact has been eroded from underneath it, and we are about to go through a democracy crisis where, in fact, if you can't equitably count the votes and live with the results, you have to question whether you really have a functioning democracy. Now, the modifications at the state level are kind of all over the place. Some of them basically roll back some of the attempts during the pandemic to make it easier to vote. And so those are about kind of reverting to the old status quo. Some of them are vote suppression measures, elaborate photo ID laws and stuff like that. Some of them, the weirdest ones, are the ones that seem to take some of the power away from state election officials for ultimate certification or verification and turn it over to state legislatures or whatever. I think as we watch all this stuff unfold, I would agree with your prediction. I think you are predicting accurately again that we are probably going to have some people who rise to and attain public office without actually having won their elections. I mean, it seems to be the goal of the Republican Party is, okay, so, we've over-focused on white Christian men, and there aren't as many of them as we thought there were. How can we win elections if we don't get more votes than the other team? And that, of course, is the answer is to monkey around with the actual nature of democracy. All right. So good prediction, but bad prediction, sad prediction, worrying prediction. All right. Here's Aaron Wallingford, because it just wouldn't be an Ask or Tell Me Anything show without at least one UFO call. So here we go. Aaron, you have the floor.
Oh, no. Am I that guy?
No, you are that guy, but we want you to be that guy. We value you.
Okay. Well, this just blows my mind. All right. So obviously this is a taboo subject. No one's supposed to talk about it. It always elicits giggles whenever it comes up, right? But so for anyone who doesn't know, this is in the air right now, pun slightly intended, right? So 60 Minutes, they just ran a segment interviewing Navy pilots who are saying, yes, we've seen this stuff. We're not only eyewitnesses with multiple pilots, with multiple cockpit persons, but multiple radar systems, both on the planes and the ships. Then the Pentagon, the Department of Defense, had to give a report to Congress, and they admitted, we do spot this stuff, and we haven't been talking about it. And then the New York Times published a piece a couple years back revealing a secret Pentagon program that had been going on for you know, a decade or something, studying this phenomenon since like 2007, I guess. So it just blows my mind. It's such an interesting topic that seemingly isn't getting a whole lot of press. But yeah, just, I don't know, thoughts.
All right. So first of all, we should tell you that we've covered this a bunch. And if you want to go back and listen to one of our old shows, it originally aired in 2019, September 10th, 2019. It was called Are We Ready to Accept That UFOs Are Real? And it's one of several shows that we've done on this topic. And it does get into the Air Force pilots or the Navy pilots, all that stuff. So, yeah. I mean, I actually do think that actually, there's a comedian that I really like. His name is Nate Bargatze, and in his most recent Netflix special, he was talking about just how chaotic the information environment has been during the pandemic. Everybody's just talking about the pandemic and COVID and stuff all the time. And if they're not talking about that, maybe they're talking about Trump or whatever. He said it's been such a strange year that they found out that UFOs are real and nobody cared. He said when that came out, the thing you're talking about, he said, that came out, I told my wife, you know, honey, it turns out UFOs are real. He said, and she just went about her day. And I do think this sort of the problem is that we're living in such a bizarro planet environment already. I mean, we have, you know, a congresswoman who talks about Jewish space lasers and stuff. I mean, we have a society right now that we'd be ashamed to show to aliens from another galaxy. You know? And we really have a global public health system that we'd be embarrassed for aliens to come and see. I mean, we should be trying to keep the aliens out of here until we get our act together so we could say, look, this is not such a bad planet. But first of all, we're destroying the planet with climate change. And then we've got a pandemic that we're managing poorly. And then we have bizarro political systems all over the world being you know, hijacked by strongman dictators. I just feel like we should just maybe just say, you know, give them like vouchers where they could come back in two or three years.
An IOU where they can come back.
Yeah, exactly. The airlines do, right? We could just say, you know, if you could just give up, we could bump you from your seat right now and you get vouchers so you can come from your weird gaseous planet in the Oort cloud, you know, at a future date when we're a little bit more prepared to receive visitors. Boy, this is a long A segment. I have to go, but thanks, Aaron. You were that guy today. We need you, Aaron. Don't feel like you're devalued at all. All right, let's take a break. Wow, this is the clock's all messed up now.
He was just an American dream. He was just an American dream. Yeah, yeah.
Support for this podcast comes from Hartford HealthCare.
Elevating Health is funded by Hartford HealthCare. A lot of people struggle with sleep apnea and with CPAP machines. Dr. Carl Muller, a head and neck surgeon with Hartford Hospital, describes Inspire, a surgical alternative to the CPAP approach.
Only about 60% of patients can tolerate CPAP real well. Inspire is a surgical alternative to CPAP. It's an outpatient surgery. It takes about 2 hours. And essentially what it does is it picks up when you're taking a breath and sends a 2-second electrical pulse to the tongue, which causes the tongue to stick out a little bit and stiffen and prevent the airway from collapsing.
Hartford Hospital has performed more than 200 Inspire therapy surgeries. If you've tried and failed with CPAP, you could be a candidate for this minimally invasive procedure.
Patients with moderate to severe sleep apnea are candidates. There is a weight criteria, so you have to have a body mass index below 35, and you have to have tried and failed CPAP.
To learn more, go to ctpublic.org/elevatinghealth.
Hi, this is Colin McEnroe. You're listening to a podcast right now. You probably know that. But if you were listening on the air, you'd also know we're in the middle of a fun drive. And even though you're not listening on the air, you're listening to a podcast. That doesn't change the fact that we need your support. And one way that you can support this show that you maybe even love or at least like is to visit ctpublic.org/donate and make a donation today. Thanks for everything that you do already. We are very grateful.
Join Connecticut Public and Fairfield County's Community Foundation for the In Community Speaker Series, May 2nd, featuring New York Times Magazine journalist Nicole Hannah Jones, creator of the 1619 Project. Jones will talk about her work covering racial injustice and the legacy of slavery on our culture, our politics, and our institutions. The event starts at 6:30 p.m. at District Music Hall in Norwalk. Tickets at ctpublic.org/speakerseries.
You spoke in Spanish on the beach. I tried to make up my mind whether I could understand a word you said. You took my hand and we walked out. I forgot to lock the door. You stood waiting in a long dark dress. I wished it could be born.
One of the things I like about these Ask or Tell Me Anything shows is that I get to pick out all the music. I don't know why it is I get to pick out all the music. I think most of the time people don't want me to do that. but Jonathan McPants, who's the producer and he's screening the calls and stuff, he wants me to pick out the songs. So there you go. All right. So I think we're going to start with Marion in Stamford. Then we're going to go to Bill in Gales Ferry. And then we'll just see where we are. We have also Bob from Middletown, who's actually been waiting for quite a long time. He wants to talk about Tonga, which who doesn't want to talk about Tonga, really? And Chris, who calls up very regularly. And so let's begin with Marion. Hi, Marion.
Hi, Colin. I'm a longtime listener to your show and lots of the shows on NPR. I'm calling with a subject that is near and dear to my heart. I've heard so many shows, not just yours, but other shows that give the due respect to first responders in this pandemic. But I haven't heard one group given the respect that they, an accolade that they really deserve, and that's veterinarians and their staff who have been working tremendously hard, long, long hours, just to take care of all the pets, the dogs, the cats, et cetera, that we have adopted during this pandemic. I especially want to recognize those vets and vet techs and their staff at the nonprofits like the ASPCA and the Humane Society. I think we really need to talk about them and give them all kinds of applause for all that they do for our pets.
Well, here, I agree. I totally agree. And the thing is also, if you start working with one particular vet or group of vets and vet techs and stuff like that, and you really find the right one, it's like, mm-hmm. you know, it's the greatest love, you know.
Absolutely.
Whitney Houston notwithstanding. Really, the greatest love. It's just such a great feeling because, obviously, we do care very much about our animals. Mm-hmm. But we don't know. We know less about how to treat the medical problems of animals than we do about how to treat the medical problems of humans, you know? I mean, mm-hmm. there's a lot of mm-hmm. stuff that can go on with your own body that you have a reasonably good guess, you mm-hmm. know? But like with animals, it's like you think, I don't know, is this a big problem? Is it a small problem? Should I go mm-hmm. call the... So I agree. We very much like where we bring our dog, Declan, and he mm-hmm. loves to go to the vet, too. It's like his favorite place. Even though like sometimes they do things like hold his head really still and pull hair out of his ears.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and even that, I mean, that would be a deal breaker for a lot of people. Like you meet somebody on Match Ooh. And you go out for a cup of coffee, you have a drink, and then they go home and they try to pull hair out of your ear. You're probably not going to stay in that relationship. But Declan really, he loves the vets. So I'm with you. They don't get enough credit. And I mean, most of them, I think, during the worst of the pandemic, you know, did the thing where they come out to your car and get the dog. That's what our vet did anyway. But no matter what, they had to go to work, you know, they had to go. It's important to have them there. So, Marion, I'm with you 100%. Let's go back over to Bill at Gales Ferry. Hi, Bill.
Yes, hi, Colin. How are you?
Good.
Okay, I have two issues. One, branding.
Okay.
I think the name of your program or the brand should be Awakening.
Awakening?
And the root, Awakening. Oh. Like, you awake.
Right. No, I get it. I get that. I know the word. I'm just wondering, do we have to negotiate with Oliver Sacks for the rights? How is that going to work?
Yes, I know. But I don't care if other people have also used that. I don't care about that. Here's what I care about is that normal people are caught in loops, and they live their lives in these loops. And what you do is you stimulate us to, whoa, wait a minute, maybe I want to jump out of my loop or make an adjustment to my loop. And so what to me, that is awakening.
So it sounds like am I a red pill? I always get the pills mixed up. Pants, would that make me a red pill? I'm a red pill. Okay.
No, actually, you're not a pill because that's too painless. You're a thumbtack.
You see how complicated branding is? Pretty soon, you're calling yourself a pill.
Okay. Second issue.
Yeah.
Congress is a hopeless mess. So, and it's a hopeless mess because we are using representational government. And what, I think that's because in the olden days, you didn't have any, communication like we have today. So I think that we should have a grassroots movement and get rid of representational government and have computers for everybody. And every week or month or whatever it is that we want, everybody can vote on whatever the issues are. Get rid of the representation.
Well, you're a dreamer. You're a dreamer. And I do think in terms of branding, a hopeless mess is a really good branding slogan for the United States Congress. They should put that in their logo, United States Congress, a hopeless mess. But here's the problem with that. I don't know whether it's a problem or not. And I sort of feel like I need to go back and read Plato and Socrates and stuff like that and see what they would say about that. I think Plato would say, yeah, but sometimes, you know, there is a whole question of how much anybody, I mean, you're trusting in the wisdom of crowds, right? You're basically saying, all right, so, you know, if we get 200 million people to vote about something, you know, there's sort of a marketplace of ideas. And so hopefully they will do good things. Except that I don't know. I actually think, unfortunately, that Congress is kind of a reflection of people. I mean, Marjorie Taylor Greene, yes, she's a representative, but people elect her. she wins elections.
Wait a second. People elect her in a geographic region that might have a very myopic point of view.
Oh, yes. And in terms of sort of taking things, yes.
If you have a collection that's larger, you're not going to get the Greens.
Right. Well, I mean, the virtue of your idea, one of the virtues of your idea, is it gets us out of the problem with the U.S. Senate, you know, which is just obviously a bottleneck for all kinds of things. And Wyoming has as many Senate votes as, you know, the state of New York, California. I mean, it's horrible. If what you're saying is that the Constitution might have worked pretty well for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, but it doesn't work very well anymore, I'm 100% with you. And I mean, probably your idea, it's hard to imagine a legislative proposal like yours resulting in anything worse than what we have now. But it also would be quite a roll of the dice anyway. But that's what we like. That's how we break the loop, right? That's how we break the loop that people are in, is you call up from Gales Ferry and you say, what about this? And suddenly we all have to think about that. What if we all, you know, voted on things? I mean, still, somebody would have to be in charge of what things we voted on. Like, there would have to be some kind of hierarchy there where somebody said, well, I mean, we're not going to vote. We can't vote on everything that everybody wants to vote about, because that would create stasis, because we couldn't get through the important stuff. So I don't know. I mean, I'm not as well prepared to think about this, like, just off the top of my head as perhaps I should be. But I think the spirit behind his proposal is a good spirit. All right. So we have to take one more very quick break, and then we'll come back from that very quick break. If you want to call up, you can bring up anything. Nobody's bringing up French dressing, which I thought was like the big story of the day. But 888-720-WNPR, 888-720-9677. Friends saying things that don't mean out loud. We are back. It is time to say some thank yous, no matter what we call the show. And my, by the way, in terms of the rebranding, I was initially said, let's find out whether we can get the rights to the call it McHale's Navy, because I feel like, you know, that hasn't been on the TV for a long time and it's a good name. Anyway, no matter what we're called, Kat Pastor will always be our technical producer, if I have my way anyway, and she is today. And Jonathan McPants is in there. He's screening calls. He's feeding information to me. He's looking at things, trying to find hidden eagles and logos. He's multitasking. That's the word I'm looking for. So, yes, tomorrow, if you're listening here live on Wednesday, tomorrow will be our show about predicting the future. And on Friday, the nose, we'll look into the whole question of Macbeth, the tragedy of Macbeth, the Scottish play, as performed by Denzel Washington and Frances McDormand, directed by one of the Coen brothers. Also, we're going to be talking about Wordle. We got to talk about Wordle. I'm amazed nobody's called about Wordle today. That would seem to be the kind of thing people would call up about. But we're going to talk about Wordle. We're probably going to talk about Joss Whedon, too. So anyway, that's a little bit of the plan for the week. Yeah, I think I'm going to maybe go to Tony here. Here's Tony in New London. You have the floor.
Hey, thank you, Colin. Hey, how about Colin's Coast Guard instead of McHale's Navy? Just throwing that out there.
I like your – that was quick. That was very quick. Very well done.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I don't have any French dressing comments, but
you know the story, right? Like for like 70 years, French dressing was regulated by, I believe, the FDA, and so you couldn't put out like a diet French dressing because it wouldn't be French dressing anymore because it wouldn't conform to the government standards for French dressing, and so there was very aggressive lobbying. By a group called, I have this somewhere in my notes, yes, the Association for Dressings and Sauces. And, you know, people talk about big pharma, big sauces, even larger, heavier lobbying footprint, the big sauces people. And so they wanted to deregulate. I guess it's 20 years that it's been regulated. No, more than 70 years, French dressing has been under the thumb of the Food and Drug Administration. But as of now, they are going to change it. Effective on Valentine's Day of this year, people celebrating Valentine's Day will be able to squirt anything all over each other and say that's French dressing because there's going to be no standards anymore. So that's the kind of chaos we're descending into. But that's not what you called up about. Yeah, well, I want to talk about what you want to talk about.
Okay. Well, I wanted to talk about, and this has been, I've been obsessed with this for a while, the Knights of Columbus. And I will have to disclose, I was a long, long time ago a member of the Knights of Columbus, in New London, as a matter of fact, though I've long since parted ways. But I'm just wondering, Colin, if I don't know if you've done a show on the Knights. I mean, their world headquarters is right there in New Haven,
yep,
right next to Yale. And they, I guess, are very involved under the table with a lot of contributions to, well, certainly anything that has to do with restricting abortion or eliminating abortion or changing the laws on abortion, and also with gay marriage and other anything related to gay marriage or anything related to gay anything, I think. And again, I don't know to what degree they've impacted some of what goes on with the Supreme Court or what goes on in some other legislatures, but they're pretty big and they're pretty savvy. And I think, like the NRA, they're pretty good about looking, you know, doing gun safety, but then promoting every, you know, not allowing any guns to be restricted. They sell insurance and do nice things for charity. But I think deep down they have this really heavy agenda. And I'm just wondering what. You know, what's really going on under the ground there?
Well, if you're a former Knight of Columbus and you wonder what's really going on, imagine how in the dark the rest of us are. But you know what? Let me just say this. I would gladly do a show about the Knights of Columbus. I think we might have even have talked about it at some point. And then we find out that they don't do any jousting or anything like that. We lost interest. But but my sense of the Knights of Columbus is that, you know, they're sort of, I don't know. I mean, that they're a little bit more of a multi-party organization. There's some fairly famous Democrats who have been Knights of Columbus. And in fact, there have been some, what do they call it? Like the Supreme Knight or something, which is really creepy. But the Supreme Knight, I think, right, sometimes it's
grand,
a republic.
The Grand Supreme Knight.
The Grand Supreme Knight. That's creepy sounding. But I think that those people have sometimes been, once again, people with, you know, political records, either in the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. It seems to swing back and forth. They're what's called a 501c8, which means that they can engage in certain kinds of political activities, although they claim it's never partisan. It probably is, as you say, you know, heavily concentrated on so-called pelvic issues. And so I don't know. It'd be a good show. I mean, I don't – it's like – I don't think the Knights of Columbus want us to do this show, except that they,
that's right.
Yeah. We'll see if we we used to have a producer named Josh Nalea here. He would have gone undercover as a Knights of, he would have lived as a Knight of Columbus for a year or something, you know, and then we would have done the show. But we don't have anybody like that.
Yeah. Well, maybe I'll look into that. Maybe if I could get back in their good graces, maybe I could go undercover.
Yeah.
Broadcast live from like the basement of the Knights headquarters.
You're gonna be like the Donnie Brasco of the Knights of Columbus.
Yeah. Then you can come up with another name for the show. Like,
right.
Something
like the Pelican Brief, but more Knights of Columbus. I feel like we're going to be getting like phone calls from Tony in a parking garage. He goes, they're coming after me right now. I'm going to tell you one last thing about the Knights of Columbus. You know, and then the line will go dead. So that would put us on a very different track as a radio show anyway. All right. So you know what? I feel bad because I haven't gotten to Bob. And then we will go to Savannah. I don't know. I mean, we're not going to Savannah. But there's a person named Savannah whose call we will take here. But first, Bob from Middletown has been on almost since the beginning of the show wanting to talk about Tonga. And so that's what we're going to do right now. Hi, Bob. Are you still there?
Yeah. Hi, Colin. I'm still here.
Sure. I'm sorry you had to wait so long.
Oh, that's all right. Let me start with a little language lesson, or just maybe that's all I'll do. It's Tonga.
Oh, really?
Oh. Yeah. So Tonga is like you'd say finger.
Yeah.
Tonga is singer.
Okay. Tonga.
Singer. Right?
Tonga. Got it.
NG is a vowel.
That's a good lesson.
NG. Yeah. The other thing is taboo, which one of your callers said. It was some other Bob, I think, from like some other
some other Bob.
And he said taboo, which is a Tongan word. Tapu means sacred. That's the name of the island, Tonga Tapu.
Wow.
And so that's cool too, right? And I'm just feeling so much for the Tongan people. I was a Peace Corps volunteer there for 2 years in the early 80s, and feel really good about the place, and you know that it's being overwhelmed is interesting. Not a disaster. That's the other, people in Tonga understand it to mean, or will come to understand it to mean, the norm, right? All of the Pacific world is made up of volcano and reef and wind and sea, and it's all created by that. And I just really appreciate how I'm certain that people aren't freaking out so much as relying on that as a comforting thing. We're Tongan. We're Pacific people. This is the thing. This is the deal. There's a word that in Tongan that stands for bursting forth. And that, I think, is kind of really important here as and it has to do with creation. It has to do with academics. So that's sort of what's happening. And then there's no internet for a month. So that's not good either. But
no, and there's like sort of potentially toxic ash in the air for a really long time.
The ash is really horrible.
Ash is the big problem, yeah. Well, listen, thanks for the language lesson, and thanks for reminding us to think about that on this day, too. All right, this is, I don't know, I've got two calls left on the board. Maybe I can get to both of them. Let's see. I said Savannah in Marlboro. She's going to go first. Here we go. You have the floor.
Hi, Colin.
Yeah.
Awesome. I'm calling to kind of rant a little bit about being a pregnant person in the middle of a pandemic and how difficult that has been. So basically just, you know, none of the normal experiences of pregnancy are happening right now. There's no, I mean, I guess you can be irresponsible and throw a 60-person baby shower, but I won't be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't get a baby shower, you don't get visitors in the hospital, you're just kind of cooped up in your house, and there's really not a lot going on. And I don't think that there's enough appreciation being shown for pregnant people in the world right now, basically.
Yeah, I'm sure it is hard. I mean, it's just like so many different aspects of life. I mean, some of these really sort of fundamental rituals of life, whether it's being pregnant or getting married or whatever, these things are, they don't have their normal profile. All I would say is, obviously, it's tough to live with, and you're you, and you're living in your own shoes and in your own skin. There are people like immunocompromised people who are dealing with even weirder and scarier realities during this time. And we all need to, you know, take pretty good care of each other and understand the kind of pain or discomfort or fear or menace that everybody's living with. But I hear you. I feel you. All that kind of stuff. And yeah, I'm sorry your pregnancy. Maybe you'll have other pregnancies and they won't be in a pandemic and things will be different. And then, of course, the kid that you have this time is going to say, well, you seems like you were more happy with my brother's pregnancy or your pregnancy with my brother, as the case may be. All right. I have to stop babbling because the show is over. Thanks to McPants. Thanks to Cat Pastor. Thanks to you for listening.